This is The Guardian.
Today, what the documents released in a serious fraud office court case revealed about payments from the Ministry of Defence to Saudi Arabia.
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
David Pegg is an investigations correspondent for The Guardian, and for the last few months, he's been engrossed in a story that goes back more than a decade.
So this story really begins in December 2010 when a whistleblower is getting on a very hastily arranged flight out of the capital of Saudi Arabia to come back to the UK as quickly as possible. He is kind of pushed through Saudi customs with the help of some friends in the Ministry of Defence, gets on a plane and breathes a very big sigh of relief. That is the culmination of what for him has been 6 months of investigating his own company and discovering very, very large unexplained payments to offshore companies that begin to worry him more and more and more and lead to a confrontation with his boss that persuades him he needs to get out of Saudi Arabia right now.
It's unlikely that you'll have heard of the company that the whistleblower worked for. It's called GPT Special Project Management. And it specialised in providing military-grade communications equipment. It only had one client, Britain's Ministry of Defence. And it had one major function: to fulfil the demands of a defence deal with Britain's close ally, Saudi Arabia. From The Guardian, I'm Nasheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, the Ministry of Defence and the payments to a Saudi prince. David Pegg, you've been following what became one of the longest running cases in the history of the Serious Fraud Office. And it was sparked by that whistleblower in Saudi Arabia. Once he'd fled the country, what did he do next?
So once the whistleblower gets back to the United Kingdom, he very quickly goes to the Serious Fraud Office and hands over some documents that he's taken from the company. He's basically got a cache of internal emails. What effectively is at the crux of this is that GPT is paying about 16% of the total value of the entire contract to offshore companies. And the whistleblower is taking a look at this and saying, well, hang on a second, what are we getting in exchange for this? And answers are not forthcoming.
So what does the Serious Fraud Office do with this cache of emails?
In 2011, the SFO start looking at it. In 2012, they formally, officially, legally open an investigation. Their investigation is looking into what happens to these payments after they leave GPT. Where do they go and who do they end up with?
Who and what did they exactly begin their case against?
At first, the SFO is looking at the company, GPT. So they're looking at what the company's been doing, what its senior staff have been doing. And one individual that they zoomed in on very quickly was a man called Jeff Cook. Jeff Cook was the managing director of GPT from 2007 to about 2013. And crucially, at the time, the whistleblower did a runner from Saudi Arabia. They then start to look at who GPT is paying the money to. That's effectively a network of companies based in offshore tax havens called Cymec. And it was run by a fella called Peter Austin, who was a longtime fixer based in the Gulf. They also take an interest in a man called John Mason, who's the finance director of Cymec. and who, in effect, like a finance director in any company, is the one who's actually signing the checks and making things happen. What they discover when they start looking at what Symec then did with the money and who Symec paid it to is that about just under £10 million of payments between 2007 and 2010 make their way from GPT through Symec, through some other middlemen in Saudi Arabia, through to a cadre of Saudi foreign officials based in the National Guard, the most senior of which is Prince Miteb bin Abdullah, who was the commander of the National Guard, and who received about £4 million of that total, in effect, to keep the contract going.
Okay, so you have what appears to be these men helping to move pretty large payments from this military communications company called GPT through a middleman to a Saudi prince. And it looks suspicious. Where does the investigation go next?
In 2014, all three men and some others, although charges are not brought, are arrested by the Serious Fraud Office, which then starts interrogating them and asking what they did with the money. After a very, very long wait, in 2020, charges are brought against Jeff Kirk, who's the manager of GPT, and John Mason, who's the finance director of Symec. The reason that Peter Austin doesn't get charged is because he's too ill to prosecute.
Well, David, there has been a lot of legal process, but a trial eventually got going in November last year. You were there. What was the atmosphere like?
The trial took place at Southwark Crown Court, which, if anyone has ever been there, is like a court that was built in the 80s. It's not the most glamorous court building in the entire world. It's certainly not, you know, the Old Bailey or the Royal Courts of Justice or anything like that. It is a functional courtroom. And the trial itself oscillates between moments of what are effectively high drama and mind-blowingly tedious discussions of paperwork and investigative process.
And so Cook and Mason stand essentially accused of bribery.
Yeah.
What was their defence?
Cook and Mason's defence is pretty extraordinary, and it's the reason we've taken such an interest in this case. Their defence is, yes, these payments were made. They accept that, they admit it. They say that that is absolutely right. But the key qualifier that they then tack on is that the reason the payments were made is because they had been approved and authorised by the British government for decades.
Sorry, is that an actual defence?
Yes, under the law they were being prosecuted under, if the payment is authorised, it doesn't constitute a corrupt payment for the purposes of a criminal conviction, and so that is a defence under the law. Since then, the law has changed, and the Bribery Act 2010 has been passed. That law is a lot tighter. As for the law that Cook and Mason were being prosecuted under, that was a defence that you could run.
It does sound like an extraordinary case to put forward in court. You know, the government told me to do it, Gov.
Yeah,
I mean, has anything like this ever been heard in a British court before?
No. No, nothing like it. Not as far as we're aware of. And it's why it was so high stakes in many ways. It was high stakes for every single party in the room and for some of the parties that weren't. For the SFO, they're Britain's specialist anti-corruption prosecutors. They only bring the most complex cases. You're dealing with the climax of a 13-year investigation.
Wow, that's a long time.
If it goes wrong, that's a lot of time to invest in something that's not pulled off. For the defendants, you're going to go to jail if you're convicted, but you're running this defence that is setting you against the British government. And for the other party that wasn't really in the courtroom, but is totally present throughout, in spirit, which is the Ministry of Defence, you're looking at the first legal case in which huge numbers of documents are being shown in open court, demonstrating what British officials knew and what they didn't know equally throughout not only this contract and these payments that these men are alleged to have made, but also a slew of other contracts. Because by making the defence that this was British government policy, in effect, what that then leads to is the Ministry of Defence having to hand over documents relating to other arms deals.
Right.
In which similar, if not identical, but similar behaviour has been going on. Jeff Cook and John Mason say, we're being hung out to dry here. We're just small fish in a much bigger sea. We're cogs in a machine. And you're just having a go at us now to cover the MOD's blushes, in effect, to cover things up on behalf of the state. Thank you.
David, it does sound incredible that the Ministry of Defence would be openly accused of knowing, let alone authorising, payments like this. I mean, what can you tell us about the history of this kind of thing?
In about the 1950s onwards, Saudi Arabia starts to come into really serious oil money. It's got petrodollars and it needs to spend them. It wants security and it's starting to buy arms. It buys arms from Brits, it buys arms from the French, from the Americans, from the Italians. There is a lot of money at play if you want it. Now, that makes for a lot of international competition. Countries like Britain and France, Britain particularly, their export industries are declining. We're starting to become a services economy. Our manufacturing base is being hollowed out. You want to get some exports going. It is in the interests of Britain PLC, to use that slightly hackneyed phrase, for a British firm to have a deal in Saudi Arabia that involves exporting some manufactured goods. Similarly, all of those factors are true for the Americans and the French as well. But there's realpolitik here as well. If you've got an arms partnership with the Saudis, that gives you a degree of regional influence in the Gulf, where there's oil, political, energy, geostrategic interests in play. So you want to be in that game. So everyone wants a piece of the pie, effectively. All these countries are bidding for Saudi arms deals. Now, in that context, you have a surprising number of documents from British officials in the 1960s and the 1970s talking very brazenly about sweeteners, kickbacks, bribes. Probably the best cable that we've got that actually spells this relationship out is one from 1969, which follows a meeting between a fellow called Brigadier Donaldson, who is effectively the head of the British military mission in Saudi Arabia. He meets privately with Prince Abdullah, who would later become King Abdullah, but at that time is Prince Abdullah, head of the National Guard. Abdullah introduces him to his fixer, and Donaldson writes this report in for his officials, and the officials then all talk about it. And they say in terms, Abdullah is looking for a deniable fiddle. That's the quote, the deniable fiddle, whereby Britain will hire the fixer as a consultant or what have you. But ultimately, that's how the money is going to be getting to Abdullah, the true recipient.
Right. So finding different ways to funnel these payments.
It's all about keeping your fingers off the paperwork. The Saudi recipients, they want their money. British officials are perfectly happy for British companies to pay them as long as they don't get caught and embarrass everybody. Because even then, it's known that it's a little distasteful. But nobody wants their fingers on the paperwork. And so the middlemen are essential. You need to go through a middleman because then everyone has deniability.
What kind of documents did the defence present about these historic arms deals to support their case?
Some of the documents the defence have been putting forward are effectively documents that strongly suggest the Ministry of Defence knew what was going on and authorised it in some instances. Probably the most striking version of this is the account of a witness from GPT's business in 1994, long before Cook and Mason were involved in the case. That witness said that when GPT first won this contract to be the prime contractor for this, you know, arms deal, its directors were asked to attend a meeting in Geneva, in Switzerland. And at that meeting in Geneva, they met with a very senior official from the British Ministry of Defence and Peter Austin, the man who controlled the CIMEC network. When they had bid for the deal to be the company that was going to be the MOD's contractor on here, they were given, you know, like if you fill in one of these tender documents about what you're going to provide, you know, you're going to provide this, you're going to provide that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All the way through that, there were various kind of requirements for what GPT would provide up until item 8, which is just listed as to be advised. Ultimately, it is at this meeting in Geneva where they are told what item 8 is by the Ministry of Defence official and by Peter Austin. Item 8 is that facilitation payments will be made by GPT to CIMEC. Item 8 is to be kept extremely confidential. Item 8 is non-negotiable. And in exchange for item 8, the contract will proceed smoothly. Now, when you put those facts together, it is abundantly clear what item 8 is all about. And indeed, the witness themselves said, I was familiar with the facilitation payments of the kind that were being discussed here. They were commonplace when you were dealing in the region at the time. But the significance of that evidence is the involvement of the Ministry of Defence official. because that suggests that very, very senior individuals in the British government knew that this was happening and were themselves participating in the meetings where it was organised.
David, take me back to the court, because last Wednesday, this case concluded, a verdict was delivered. What happened?
The jury found that they were not guilty. They had run this defence to the effect that the payments did happen but were authorised by the British government. There was a little bit more to it than that, but obviously, but that was the core of it. And after almost 30 hours of deliberations, the jury returned verdicts of not guilty in respect of both Jeff Cook and John Mason. Nobody knows why juries make the decisions that they make, but given that their defence was these payments were authorised by the British and Saudi governments, it is a very real possibility that the jury declined to convict these men on the basis that they thought that's entirely right, and that was what happened.
David, what was your reaction? Were you surprised by that verdict?
No, I wasn't, actually. There was no point at which me and my colleague Rob Evans were sitting through this case thinking to ourselves, Christ, this is a flyer, you know, this isn't going to get them anywhere. This was not something that had, you know, been, you know, plucked out of thin air. This was a defence that was based on decades and decades of documentation. Now, nobody is ever in the modern day so crude as to write down, yes, you can make these payments, it's all fine. It's all done on a wink and a nod here, a bit of willful blindness over there. But there was no end of documentation demonstrating that the British government knew payments were being made on this contract in the 90s, that they were involved in arranging it in the early 90s, and even in the mid-2000s, that they were sending letters saying, yes, it's permitted to pay subcontractors. You know, we note you've told us that you're going to do it, and yes, we acknowledge that. And so, no, it wasn't a surprise, actually. It wasn't a surprise.
Coming up, what else David found in those documents going back decades?
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
David, incredibly complex cases like this mean that journalists can get access to massive cache of documents that they may never have otherwise. You've been digging through hundreds of these for this case. What did you find?
What we've been able to get access to with the SFO's help were the documents that were shown to the jury. We made an application to the court that was successful. So what we're looking at there is documentation backing up the case that the prosecution is making and documentation backing up the case that the defence is making. Probably the most intriguing case that we found having looked at these materials is what's called Project Arrow. Project Arrow is a deal struck in 2014 whereby, at the behest of Prince Mitep, who is the head of the National Guard and said to be the person benefiting from these payments that the men are being prosecuted for, Prince Mitep directs that the MOD itself is to pay a company in Saudi Arabia. That company is called ABTSS, and it's owned by well-known kind of long-time associates of Prince Mihtab. And not only that, but the payments for which Cook and Mason are at the time under investigation and are later prosecuted for are made to the very same company.
Right.
ABTSS. So on the one hand, you've got British corruption prosecutors saying ABTSS is a vector for payments to foreign officials, including Prince Mihtab. On the other hand, you've got the MOD taking instructions from Mihtab to the effect that they have to pay ABTSS £8 million.
What do we know about how Prince Mihtab suggested this?
A lot of the documents around Project Arrow have been redacted, blanked out, so there's a lot of detail we can't see. What we do know is pretty limited, but it runs something like this. The head of this arms deal for military communications equipment, the head of the MOD project tells his colleagues he's had what he calls a fastball, whereby Mihtab has effectively directed that £8 million is to be paid to ABTSS for the provision of something, we don't know what, for the provision of something to the Saudi Arabian National Guard. What we do know is that it's probably something to do with IT, because there's a reference to needing, you know, somebody with IT skills. There was definitely something there. It's not just nothing, but we don't know what it was. Immediately, one quite senior MOD civil servant says, we've got to be really careful about this, especially considering who owns the companies involved. And that is a reference to ABTSS, which by that stage, it's known within the MOD is under investigation in connection with GPT. Hence the immediate nervousness.
Right. So the timeline of when all this happens is pretty interesting. Is it conceivable that the Ministry of Defence did this? You know, it followed Prince Mihtab's suggestion to pay this company this money in order to keep the whole defence deal on track as a result of the Serious Fraud Office's investigation.
That's the allegation of the defence. Cook and Mason's lawyer said that the reason Arrow happened was because after the SFO investigation began, GPT stopped making the payments, at which point, they say, the Saudis got very angry and started pressuring them to get the payments going again. The MOD are very clear that they reject that. And the SFO, although they haven't investigated Project Arrow, they don't think the MOD did this in order to make payments to foreign officials. One of the individuals who dealt with Arrow said in court at the time that it was never at any point suggested to him that the purpose of this was to make dodgy payments to Mihtab, and he would have been very alarmed if anyone had. He would have sent it straight up the chain. So the MOD denies that there was anything improper about the Project Arrow payments. But nonetheless, the fact still stands. The MOD accepts that the payments were made. Arrow was struck. And between 2014 and 2017, £8 million was paid from the Ministry of Defence to a company that the Serious Fraud Office says is a vector for payments to Saudi officials.
David, this is all quite recent history now. So while Project Arrow may have been brought to an end, is it possible that something similar has replaced it?
Yeah, perfectly possible. Arrow was part of the deal, does still exist. It's run by very different people now. But whether the MOD has similar contractual relationships with other companies that it has struck at the instruction of foreign officials, and where the MOD's own civil servants have expressed misgivings about whether they should be getting into those contractual relationships, those we don't know.
David, this is such a complicated case. And of course, we should stress, Mason and Cook were acquitted on these charges. But you've told us about something that goes back further than this one story, starting decades ago, with government officials talking about sweeteners and kickbacks and all the rest. And it seems like there is a moral issue at the heart of this, whether it's right to be making these kind of payments to secure multi-billion pound trade deals. Is there any way in which all that is justified?
Depends who you ask, and it depends how openly they're talking. You know, if you go to the British government now and you say, does the British government approve of bribery for sort of winning business? They'll tell you absolutely not. If you talk to a minister who retired decades ago and doesn't have any skin in the game anymore, they're much more open about it. And they will say, look, this is the world in which we are operating. It's very easy for you to sit in your ivory tower in The Guardian and say this is all terribly wrong. But the reality is, when the chips are down, we need regional influence. And this is the way we've got to secure it. So that's the call we made. Now, different people will take different sides on that debate. People like to think of bribery as a sort of victimless crime. It isn't. This money is being taken out of Saudi Arabia and is being effectively sluiced through a series of extremely baroque and complex deals in order to, that, you know, people who are already extremely wealthy members of the royal family and the officials surrounding them can become even more wealthy and can squirrel the money away into, you know, Swiss bank accounts or wherever. Now, there's a cost to that. It erodes people's confidence in Saudi Arabia as a place you want to do business. It erodes people's confidence in Britain, because Britain is on the one hand saying corruption is appalling and we will never tolerate it and we're going to fight it everywhere we find it. And on the other hand, has, you know, a government department filled with rooms full of archived documents in which they talk about paying sweeteners and inducements and kickbacks. You've got to choose what kind of country you're going to be. Is it going to be the country that says, fine, we'll dirty our hands in order to do this because it gives us a short-term advantage? Or is it going to be the one that sticks to its principles? It's a harder question to answer than I made it sound there. I do understand that. I understand if you're a minister and you're confronted by this decision, it all seems more complicated. But when you look at it in the cold light of day, I don't think it is complicated.
David, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was David Pegg, The Guardian's investigations correspondent. Do read his reporting on this story. There's a lot more, and I can promise you the details are mind-boggling, all at theguardian.com. One of the two defendants in this story, Geoffrey Cook, was found guilty last week on a separate charge, misconduct in a public office, for an offence committed when he was at the Ministry of Defence. He'll be sentenced at a later date. Before we go, let me convince you that if you haven't subscribed to The Guardian's Black Box yet, now is very much the time. It's an incredibly compelling series about AI, the impact on our lives, on humanity, all the big things. And it's presented by my brilliant co-host, Michael Safi. Episode 3 is out now, with new episodes every Thursday and Monday. Listen to that where you listen to this. And finally, you might also be interested in our Guardian newsletter, Techscape. Every week, journalist Alex Hearn takes a deep dive into how tech is shaping our lives. Sign up for free by going to theguardian.com/techscape/audio. And that is it for today. I'm Nisheen Iqbal, and this episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producer was Phil Maynard. We'll see you again tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. 6 factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforming higher education. This message was paid for by EY.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.